All right, we got Ben here, and this is the real deal, Ben. This is Ben, the business partner. If you listen to every single episode of this podcast, you hear me 2 hours a week. I probably talk to Ben 20 hours a week.
Yeah, pretty much. I feel like you have 100 times more great stuff that never makes it anywhere. It just goes into our text thread and dies immediately. And we got to bring it out.
I feel like I could rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back.
Ben, I was counting before we started this episode. So together, we've been working together for 5 years now. We've created 9 different things. I don't know if you've seen this. We've created 9 different projects that have made more than $1 million each. So the very first thing we did together is the All Access Pass, which was a pretty batshit crazy idea where I was like, what if listeners of the pod could actually see what I'm doing every day to build a business? And I basically was like, for 3 months, I'm 90 days, I'm going to send an email every day just showing you what I worked on each of those days while I try to do X thing, whatever the thing I was going to try to do was. Like, one of them was like start an e-com brand. One of them was raise a fund. One of them was start a course, whatever. And so that one did over $1 million.
The craziest part about that one is you were basically like, hey, dude, I just met you or we barely worked together. Want to do a 90-day sprint where we just figure out what we're going to do and then tell everyone in the world what we're doing? But we've basically never worked together before then.
We've never worked together. Also, we have like what's the opposite of a romantic comedy first meeting? You know, like in a romantic comedy, they're like walking down the street, then they like bump into each other, and then the papers fall on the ground, then they scoop them up, they make eye contact, and they're whatever. They're like, it's a thing. Ours was completely different. I think you were just a listener to the podcast, and I was testing out an idea that was like these CEO mastermind groups. So I said, hey, I need 5 or 6 people who have a business that does over $1 million a year. Come join this group, which basically became Hampton, by the way. Sam ended up turning that into a real business called Hampton. I did one group and you were in it. And the funny thing was you had a business that was doing over $1 million a year. And Ben, how many customers did you have in that business?
One customer.
Ben had a business with a single customer that paid him $1 million a year. Can you say, it's over now, you can say who it is?
Yeah, it was Anheuser-Busch at the time, Budweiser.
So Ben is basically like, yeah, my customer is Budweiser. There are no other customers. They pay me $1 million a year to do this like very simple thing where you were like, I don't know, you were like building their SMS list for them or something like that. But you seemed bored out of your mind. And also, like, you seemed bored out of your mind, and I was trying to do new things, and I was like, hey, I like this guy. He's got a good vibe. You want to try some stuff with me. Is that the summary of how it went down for you?
Pretty much. I mean, the only other thing is like peak COVID. I specifically remember like it was those masterminds and watching the Jordan doc, and those were the highlights of the month,
the last
basically.
Dance. Why did you say yes? Because you had a business that was doing $1 million a year. I was not offering you more money than that. Why did you say yes to the offer, by the way? I think there's something, you have good instincts. And I think I've never asked you this, but why did you even say yes to begin with?
I mean, at the time, I felt like I tried everything to figure out how to grow that business, and I just had zero answers. I'd been like, you know, it had been a year, and it was like, I've tried literally everything I can think of. Not one thing is working. Like, this is kind of going nowhere. I'm hitting a wall every time. That was one. And then two, you know, I thought you had a ton of juice. And I feel like I text you this all the time, which is TMJ. I just feel like you have too much juice, which I felt then. I feel now, which is like, you know, this guy is a beast. This guy is like, you know, the next Joe Rogan.
Is it TMJ, like the thing where your jaw hurts? It's like when you have like
too much juice to me.
But, yeah, that's what I have. I got a bad case of TMJ, too much juice.
So, you know, I just had belief in you, and I was like, I'm going to take a bet. And also, I had felt like I just ran against I'd hit the wall 100 times in a row trying to grow that thing, and it had gone nowhere.
Well, I do appreciate that. You do have a shit ton of belief in me, which is cool. We actually have this phrase we call, what do we call it? Like, your first believer, which is basically everybody I know who's successful in life at some point had somebody who irrationally believed in them. Right. Bill Simmons calls it the irrational confidence guy. I think there's that for entrepreneurs too, which is before you've proven anything, before you've actually done it. And honestly, when you still kind of suck, somebody is just like, no, I believe, I'm in, blank check belief in you. Like for me, that was this guy, Michael Burch, initially when I was 23, 24 years old. And he kind of like recruited me for a job I wasn't really qualified for. And then he named me CEO. He gave me his job as CEO. I was the youngest person in the company. And that was irrational. Like there was really no proof, no logic, no nothing. But like, I will never forget that. And then we've actually taken that where if we believe in somebody, we don't believe it in private. We go tell them. We're like, and me and you will text them and be like, dude, like there's this guy, Billy Oppenheimer, who I think we both are big believers in. And we'll just text Billy and be like, I'm buying all the Billy Oppenheimer stock on the market right now. Like I'm cornering the Billy Oppenheimer, you know, market right now. I'm trying to build a huge position here because I am a believer in you and your talents. Have you seen that? And who else are we kind of first believers in? Do you know?
Yeah, I think George Mack says that you were one of the first believers in telling him he should stop doing an agency. He should just go all in on betting on himself. Eshawn, your old intern.
Yeah, I was a first believer in him for sure. Yeah, he was like probably 18 years old to start working with him. But I think everybody needs that. And whoever was that for you, you should send him a note today and just be like, by the way, thank you for that. That was huge for me. And you had no reason to believe me, but you did. But I think more people need to do that. It's like an angel investor. But before money, you need at least belief that you can do something, right? Like it's actually more important as a starting ingredient than cash initially. And I think more people need to have that like belief angel investor.
You need someone to give you minutes in the game. You know, I just want to give me two minutes. Yeah. Don't leave me on the bench.
A coach that puts you on the floor. Dude, you were just, speaking of basketball, you were just at this fantasy camp thing. Can you explain what this was? Like two weeks ago, Ben goes, hey, I'm going to be offline for a week. I'm going to the Duke basketball fantasy camp, coach, the K Academy. Can you explain what this is? Because I think this is kind of amazing.
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago, I basically decided to go to K Academy, which is Coach K. Obviously, you know who he is, Sean, famous Duke coach. Every year he hosts a basketball camp for people that are 35 and older. Spoiler alert, I just turned 35 like 6 months ago. So the first time I could go, I immediately decided to go. I took my dad with me. So it was me and my dad. We haven't hung out for 5 days in a row in years without kids. So we go to North Carolina, and it's unbelievable.
It's basically rich dude fantasy camp. It's like summer camp for rich dudes, right?
Yeah, it's basically rich dudes that want to go back to high school where they were on the basketball team and they're competing like their lives depend on it. And every other hour, someone's tearing
honestly,
their ACL.
Honestly, that's an amazing pitch because I would happily pay 10 grand for that right now. If you could take me back to when I was on my high school basketball team, that was like the happiest days of my life.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then immediately when I got there in the first game, I got way less minutes than I thought. And my dad was like, cussing under his breath that I should have got more minutes. I was like, I don't know that I actually want to go back to high school again where I literally had the same exact experience. But so we get there and it's 150 people and everyone there, like one for me, actually.
Wait,
so I love
do the math on that. 150 people. What is the price of this thing?
It's $13,000.
All right. So it's a $2 million kind of 5 day camp basically for them revenue wise.
Yeah, $2 million, but I think everyone there like basically becomes a part of their fund and helps support Duke Athletics. So it's great for that. It's like great top of funnel for key people for Duke
becoming
Athletics.
A booster or an alumni, a sort of like a supporter of the program.
Yeah, but what I wanted to do when I went there, I was like, yeah, I love basketball. It's going to be awesome. But I just want to meet every single person that's here. Because if you're spending 13 grand to hoop for 5 days, you're probably rich and interesting.
Or just rich, maybe, and not that interesting. That's also a possibility.
Cutting your sales cycle in half sounds pretty impossible, but that's exactly what Sandler Training did with HubSpot. They use Breeze, HubSpot's AI tools, to tailor every customer interaction without losing their personal touch. And the results were incredible. Click-through rates jumped 25%. Qualified leads quadrupled, and people spent three times longer on their landing pages. Go to HubSpot.com to see how Breeze can help your business grow.
We should explain this. Like I always say, we're business partners. What does that actually mean? What do you actually do?
I describe, you know, the way I tell people, which you'd probably tell people differently, is like three things. I say, you know, basically just try to make the main mission happen. And the main mission changes very often, which is everything from make great content to make money to just have fun. And then I add the last part, which is like, well, also not working that hard. You know, like I think I work hard, but I think in general, like want to have a good time and want to also be there for my friends and family. And I'd say the fifth part is I probably spend 20% of my time playing basketball. So I added that in last year, which is, you know, I want to spend 20% of my time playing basketball. So I spend a lot of time just trying to find interesting things that we can attack that may support the main mission. So whether that be buying a company, an investment, some interesting content ideas, meeting people.
So here's some examples. One of them was, let's raise a fund, right? This was back in 2021, maybe 2020. We decided, hey, we want to raise a fund to invest in startups. We have all this deal flow. Let's do this. And so that became the main mission for like a 3-month period. And we raised, I think, something like $20 million to invest into startups. Okay, great. Then we did grow my e-com store. I think at the time you joined, maybe my e-com brand was doing $5 million a year in revenue. And then now it does $25 million or $30 million in revenue. And so for 12 months, like that was the mission. And so the funny thing is we'll just like pick a main mission roughly every, I would say, 3 to 6 months, we pick a main mission. The longest we've done is probably a year or two. And we just do whatever it takes to figure that out. So for example, when we were doing the e-com thing, neither you nor I knew anything about e-commerce. And one of the things Ben does that's brilliant is he's basically very, very good at getting insights from the audience. And so what you did was you created this group called Club LTV. And Club LTV was basically, you put out a call, you go, if you own an e-commerce brand that does more than $5 million in revenue, right? We were at $5 million. You were like, if it does more than $5 million in revenue, come hang out in this thing. I'm not selling you anything. It's free to join, but you got to be legit. You got to be the owner and you have to do over $5 million in revenue. And we're just going to hang out every other Friday. I'm going to host it. It's like speed dating. You're going to meet a bunch of other e-com founders. We're going to share what's working in our businesses. And then every week, one guy's going to stand up and say like, oh, here's what I'm doing with TikTok. Here's what I'm doing with email marketing. And you're going to learn something that's going to instantly make, if you just implemented it, it'll make you more money. That was the general idea. And you got like, I don't know, 150 e-com business owners in there in like, you know, the first month. And then suddenly we were just getting, whatever problem we had, somebody in that group had already had that problem and could answer it. And so it just accelerated our business learning so fast from doing that. And that's kind of where I figured out this model of like, I create the content, I attract interesting people, but I'm kind of an introvert. I just like being alone. Like I like doing stuff like this podcast, just me in my bedroom. Like I don't really like going out and doing meetups or hangouts or doing calls. Ben loves that shit. And so Ben would go meet people, talk to them, see what they're up to, find a way to help them, introduce them to people, make connections, be useful to them. And in doing so, they would, you know, every one out of every 20 of those people would do something that's useful to us. Maybe we invest in their company. Maybe they teach us something, whatever it is. That's an example of how it's worked in the past.
Yeah. And I think the two things I think about a lot are like, you know, I want to be useful. Like, you know, a lot of this is I don't want to take from people. It's like, hey, I want to help you. And like when and if we ever need anything, I know they'll take my call, but it's not really about that. It's just like, hey, I talk to a lot of people. I might know something that you might want to know. I might know someone you should know. And then two, I think this is a Warren Buffett thing, which is like, you can't connect the dots looking forward.
Steve Jobs.
All right. A lot of this is, a lot of it is creating serendipity and luck. And, you know, I just never know it's going to connect. You know, something that someone might've said a year ago might randomly hit that I never thought of for the past year.
Well, we should explain because people don't know how we do this. So first explain who this guy, I think his name is Nick Dio. Explain who that guy is and then how he kind of inspired us to do stuff on our side.
Yeah. So Nick Dio, let's just call him Nick Dio. I like that better than Dio. But essentially he's Gary V's relationship guy, I think is the way I would say it. So Gary V obviously has tons of access, owns a huge agency, but he can only be so many places at once. So he's basically built this guy, Nick. And what he does is he manages all of Gary's core relationships. So from what I've heard, he basically will host a dinner every night. Anyone that wants to meet Gary, he connects them. He's the main guy that's the face of Gary. He's front forward. He collects everything. He helps people.
And sometimes, and I think a lot of times, Gary's not even there. So it'll be like, Gary really likes this person or these people, or he wants to get to know certain people. Nick will go and host an event or take them on a trip or hang out with them, almost like on behalf of Gary, right? Like Gary's not even there some percentage of the time. I think a large percentage of the time.
I think like 99% of the time Gary's not there. I think it's literally Nick 99.
But the guy knows. He's just like, yeah, Gary thinks what you're doing is dope. We just want to get to know you. If we can ever be helpful, let us know. I heard this, and this was like in sports. There was this thing that came out several years ago that was like, LeBron James spends $1 million a year on his body. like on just treatments, you know, trainers, food, all of it, like $1 million a year just fine tuning his body. And other athletes heard that and they were like, shit, dude, I'm not doing it. Like, I just kind of go to the gym, or like, I just use the team's guy. I don't do that. But it makes total sense. It's like, if you're an athlete, your body is your business. Like, it makes sense to spend money maintaining and improving your body. So LeBron did that. And I've always had this question, which is like, what's my version of spending $1 million a year on my body, right? And so when I heard that Gary Vee has this guy, Nick, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Gary is like building a magnet to attract people who like what he's all about, right? That's his content that he's putting out there. But he can't, and maybe he doesn't even want to, just constantly be meeting people that he's attracting because it's too much. The audience is too big. So of course, it sounds crazy to be like, he hired a guy that just hangs out with people in his orbit. And I was like, yeah, that sounds a little weird, but actually that's obvious and logical, and we should totally do that. And I didn't hire you in that way. That's not what, but you would end up doing that because you're extroverted. You actually like, you get a lot of energy from texting people, talking to people. Like today, how many people, or like in the last 24 hours, how many people have you texted?
I mean, you know, probably like 70. It's a ton.
Like, if I look on my phone right now, how many people do I actually text on a day-to-day basis? There's my wife. There's the lady who we're getting our mortgage loan from. My dad for Father's Day. Yeah, there's like 7 people max that like I'm talking to in a given day. And even that, I'm pretty bad at replying. Whereas you just love doing it and you do it all the time. In fact, you had this like little phrase. You're like, I was like, you know, what's the secret? And you're like, I reply, bro. Most people just don't reply. I reply. Ben, he replies. That's what he does. And you also check in with people and see like what they're up to and how it's going. You congratulate people all the time on what they do. You have these like little things that just kind of keep people in our orbit. So that's one thing is learning from that. The other is we took luck and we actually made it like a business metric that you measure. Could you explain the luck system and how we do that?
Yeah. So the core idea, I think, was basically, okay, if we're going to spend a ton of time creating luck that's going to, you know, surface in a ton of ways, maybe it's going to surface in content, maybe it's going to surface in an investment, maybe it's going to surface in a future business, you got to track it. You know, it's really easy basically to say, oh, every day I'm gaining weight, but I never get on the scale because I just don't want to look at it. And then I just gain 10 pounds. Like, it happens so fast. But if I'm on the scale every day, I'd never get any weight. And what I mean by that is, I basically decided, okay, I want to track what I'm actually doing. And I want to track what I'm actually doing. So every day I want to say, okay, here's like the 5 or 6 things I did today that I think will create some luck. And then I want to actually see, did anything ever hit in any way looking back? So an example might be, okay, if I pull up my spreadsheet, I found this tweet that then became a great piece of content for MFM. So, you know, another example might be, okay, we ended up getting into this deal that was because I chased this guy pretty aggressively to get into this round, and then we wired him.
So like, you know, an example would be, you know, one thing you're great about is you're like happy for other people. I think a lot of people in the entrepreneurial game get bitter as other people become successful. You see that, oh, they hit this revenue, and your actual reaction is either like, fuck, you know, we're way less, or you know, whatever, that's not going to last. I think there's a lot of that bitterness people don't really say out loud. But in general, I think that's a pretty common reaction for people. Whereas I've been around you a bunch. You actually have the opposite. If something awesome happens for people, you literally are like, oh, that's awesome. Congrats. And so you'll do something like somebody hits a milestone and you'll send them a cake with like the number on it. And so you do these like random things that seem to be like, I don't know, unproductive in nature. Like you took 15 minutes to like design a cake to send this guy. But then that guy calls you thanking you, and then you catch up with him and he tells you about this thing that he's doing, and you realize like, oh, for our basketball event, I didn't realize this guy actually knows the owner of that team. We could ask him for an intro. And like, you create luck through just a bunch of these different activities that you're doing. Other simple examples would be like, you are pretty willing to just refer people to like, you find out that somebody's looking for X, you'll take an hour and go actually like hunt down a referral for them and go find them the agency they're looking for, or the person they're looking for, and like make the connection. You'll do it same day for that person. It doesn't seem in the moment like there's anything to gain in that for us, but it builds so much goodwill that of course like there's business karma. It comes back around. And so what we did was we looked at, all right, in the last 2 years, what are all the best things that have happened? And then if you kind of trace the 23andMe, the ancestry.com, like what led to that? So we have this one business that's just going gangbusters right now. It's we haven't announced it yet, but it, like, you know, it's, we just crossed 10 million in ARR profitably bootstrapped in like less than, you know, 18 months. And that business is amazing. But if we look at, well, how did we get the key customers for that? Where did we get the intro for that? Where did we hire that key talent for that? Each one of those came from basically Ben doing random shit. So we decided the Peter Drucker mantra, what gets measured gets managed. Let's actually treat luck like something you can actually manage. Could you measure it? If you could measure it, would that encourage you to do more of it? If you did more of it, would more good things happen? And the answer so far for us has been yes. Even though this is kind of a nerdy thing, this is like when Sam talks about how him and Sarah do offsites and have like OKRs for their relationship. And you're like, oh, dude, you're kind of killing the romance here. It's like most people treat luck the same way where it's like, dude, just let it happen. And we actually treat like creating luck as a skill, like luck is a thing you can actually influence how much of it you're going to have in your life. And then we kind of celebrate you doing things that generate more and more luck for us.
I also think it makes you just think about the things I'm learning or seeing, because it's like, oh, if I write it down, if I just keep it in my head, one, you never hear it. It never goes anywhere. It's pretty easy for me to forget. But if I write it down, it's like, oh, that actually was interesting. Or this story someone told me would actually make sense to tell on the podcast, or we should follow up on that. So I think that helps a ton too. Right.
It also changes your decision-making. Like sometimes you'll be like, ah, should I go do this? Like you went and flew out and hung with Jesse Itzler for like a couple of days. There was really no, like, we weren't trying to do a deal with him. We weren't trying to sell him on anything. There's no agenda. He's awesome. We thought he was awesome. He was like, hey, you should come hang. And you were like, you know, people just say that as like a figure of speech. Like, oh yeah, if you're ever in town, hit me up. Whereas we were like, well, I think doing that will generate some good things. Good, that increases our luck quotient if you do that versus if you just sit at home for the next 2 days. So Ben books a flight, goes, hangs out with him for 2 days. Sure enough, while you're there, the conversation leads to different, like, you know, different good things, different either learnings, insights, opportunities, whatever it may be. And I don't think we would maybe have the green light to shoot our shot as we do now that we actually like made it one of our like kind of goals is to create more luck. And actually our goal for the year is Ben's got to create 100 lucky breaks. And so he keeps track of the 100 lucky things that go our way. And in order to do that, you got to do like 500 or 700 just interesting things that might generate those 100 lucky breaks.
Yeah, I will say Jesse Itzler's a proud member of the TMJ crew, Too Much Juice. So if you're in, if you got too much juice, you know, you get a round trip flight from me immediately if you're in that class.
All right, my friends, I have a new podcast for you guys to check out. It's called Content is Profit, and it's hosted by Luis and Fonzie Cameo. After years of building content teams and frameworks for companies like Red Bull and Orange Theory Fitness, Luis and Fonzie are on a mission to bridge the gap between content and revenue. In each episode, you're going to hear from top entrepreneurs and creators, and you're going to hear them share their secrets and strategies to turn their content into profit. So you can check out Content is Profit wherever you get your podcast.
Explain your barbell thing, because I like this. This, I think more people should do this.
And the way I operate is basically two things. Either I'm constantly, my phone is just constantly texting people with things I see. So it's either, okay, we're constantly talking via text, or I'm texting
but in
you.
A very lightweight way, right? Like it's very light communication. You're not sitting on a 40-minute Zoom call with them.
Yeah, and I do go by the I reply thing, although since I told you that and since I think you said it on the podcast, every time I don't reply, I feel very guilty because, you know, sometimes yeah. Sometimes I forget, or sometimes it's just hard when you have a lot of texts. And then the barbell is just go spend more time in person with people. So I haven't done it as much as I want to, but I think longer hangs. I think this is also a David Senra idea, which is you do longer hangs.
I think Coogan was the one who told John Coogan from Technology Builder, TBPN. He was the one who told us this idea, or he said it out loud, at least to me. And it was like, the middle zone is death. It's death by 1,000 Zoom calls. So like a 40-minute Zoom call or 45-minute Zoom call is basically the worst of both worlds. It's like kind of takes a lot of energy to do it, but you don't really build that much of a bond or relationship in it. You don't even get into much depth. You would rather be like just quick, funny memes and texts or sending tweets to people just to kind of like, it's very lightweight, takes you 10 seconds. Or go hang out with them for, you know, 5 hours. Just go fly to them and hang out with them for 5 hours. Or go drive up there and go grab lunch, go for a walk, and then, you know, have a coffee. And like, if you do that, you actually get like way more of a connection and a bond and more insight. More, it's a different type of hang. And it's actually, it sounds like it's, you know, it's the equivalent of 10 Zoom calls. But no, it's like the equivalent of like 200 Zoom calls when you do it, right? And so you want to spend your time on either end of the barbell, the lightweight side, or like go really in depth. There's a good example of this, by the way. Chris Sacca used to do this. I don't know if you know this story, but he was an angel investor and he moved out of San Francisco, which at the time made no sense. It's like all the angel investors are in San Francisco. That's where all the startups were. But he goes, you know what? If I'm in San Francisco, I'm just constantly playing defense. I'm just taking all these random coffee meetings and kind of feels very surface level. It's not differentiated. So he moves to Truckee, which is near Lake Tahoe. He buys a cabin and he gets a second cabin, like a guest house right next to his cabin. And what he did was if he found somebody who was interesting, he would like make a bigger effort. He would invite them to come to stay for a weekend in his cabin and let's hang out. And founders are like, oh, that's cool. I'll go to Lake Tahoe. That sounds like fun. And then he would spend like 48 hours with this person. They're in the hot tub together. They're skiing together. They're talking, they're drinking, they're eating, they're cleaning up, they're doing all this different stuff. And by the end of that, like they actually feel like good friends, not like you would get at a coffee meeting. Plus he would really understand their business. And this is how he got into the Uber deal and how he got into the Instagram deal was he invited the founder of Uber and the founder of Instagram to come hang out for the weekend. And it was in that weekend where they kind of like solidified the bond. He understood the business in depth. He knew really how good this founder was and what they were really made of, which you couldn't get in a 20, 30 minute coffee meeting. And he knew to back up the truck and invest.
And I think it's also cool to just go hang out with people and see how they live. I think we've talked about this a lot. It's like, you know, you go see how someone like Monish Pabrai lives when we go to his house and hang out with him. And you can taste their lifestyles and decide whether or not it's actually interesting.
Right. By the way, I'm looking at the luck sheet right now. This is a great example. Your mission was to grow MFM at one point. So you were spending a couple of months trying to grow My First Million. And you were like, dude, you guys don't bring enough guests on. The guest episodes do well. But you and Sam are pretty lazy. You don't like to reach out to guests. And so you're just like, you know, it doesn't really happen. So you went back, you looked at the archive and you were like, all right, let me find somebody who was awesome on the pod before, bring them back. And so you found that Jesse Itzler was on a year or two ago. You tried to get him on. He didn't reply. He didn't reply again. And then you saw that he had like, I don't know, his calendar or his book was coming out. And you basically bought 100 of them proactively. And you were like, hey, I think your calendar's awesome. I bought 100 of these and I'm going to give them away on My First Million. You know, just keep doing what you're, you know, keep doing what you're doing. This is great. And he replies to that because he's like, oh, dude, somebody just came and bought 100 of my product because they think it's awesome. Like, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. And by the way, yeah, like I'm happy to come on again. And then he comes on the podcast and it reignited maybe a relationship that was kind of dormant. And you've done that a bunch where you'll like, somebody comes out with a product, you buy it, you hype it up, you celebrate it, and then that makes them feel good. And that leads to like good things. But all this stuff is like pretty unpredictable when you're doing it, but it works out.
Yeah. I think like, you know, it is important to say none of this is transactional. You know, I kind of do this again. Goal is to be useful. I want to help people. Again, I think we all win together. Like this is not a zero sum game. You know, we help people, they help us, et cetera. That's how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, for every one thing I'm saying that led to this, there's 11 other things that didn't lead to anything. And we're totally fine with that. It was just fun to do. It was nice to do. So we did it. You know, that's all. There was no expectation of something happening except for you just know like, hey, if I do a bunch of great stuff with great people, like good things are going to come out of that. So that's the luck thing. You sent this doc with other stuff on it. Let's talk about some of these other things.
All right. I know normally, basically, you always do business ideas, but I feel like you and I talk business nonstop. It's just constantly business ideas. So I made a list of things that I wish existed, basically stuff I want to be customer number one of that I want to talk to you about and show you and see what you think.
So things that don't exist today, but you kind of wish, you low-key wish existed.
Yeah, and you know I'm an early adopter, so someone makes these, I'm going to buy them.
Ben tries weird stuff. He'll be like, oh, I'm eating this peanut butter that's made out of caramel only. And I'm like, what? And he'll buy any product that's like weird, but there's a chance it's amazing. Most likely sucks, but there's a chance it's amazing. So I'm guessing these ideas are going to be like that. Probably weird, probably suck, but there's a chance it would be amazing. Am I right on that?
Yeah, and 1 out of 10 hits, and you know, hey, I'm glad I tried 10 random peanut butter protein things, you know?
All right, so this is Ben's random wish list. Let's go.
So I've got 3 ideas, or I've got 10 ideas, but the first one I'll give you is courtside seats. So whenever you, obviously, you know what courtside seats are. Whenever you're watching an NBA game, they always show, you know, at the Knicks games, they show Timothy Chalamet every time going nuts with Kylie Jenner. But I just think there's way more to do around courtside seats. Let me give you I have three courtside seat spinoff ideas. So one,
okay,
I want to make a YouTube channel where basically all you do is buy courtside seats and you interview someone courtside every game. Goal is figure out what do they do, how much money do they make, how do they make their money, and all you have to do is buy a courtside seat and you immediately can get someone every single game. What do you think?
Okay, so the upside is you get to be courtside. So worst case scenario, your YouTube channel fails, but you got to go sit courtside at a bunch of games. It does use that thing that seems to work, which is on TikTok. People go and like stop like a rich person in their car. They're like, hey, just nice car, man. I just want to ask, you know, what do you do? And then they say something and it creates like, you know, this 1 minute thing that tends to go viral or people like that stuff. So you're basically piggybacking off of that. But the investment here is pretty substantial, right? Like how much are courtside seats anyways? Like how much would this even cost to do? 40 home games a year. So what are you spending to do this?
It probably depends where you're doing it. I think if you're doing it in Orlando, you're probably spending $100,000. If you're doing it in New York, you're probably spending $400,000, $500,000.
Which you could probably go get like a FanDuel or SeatGeek or somebody up front to sponsor you for this and be like, hey, look, I'm going to, you know, this is the concept. I bet you could pitch them enough to be like, this is going to be kind of like a show where you're the main sponsor. And I think this will do really well. I kind of think you could get it paid for, you don't need all of them paid for, but like enough to do 4 or 5. And then once you get some views, then you can kind of go from there. It's not a bad idea.
And then the tangent I have on it is like, why are there not courtside seats at the Apple demo day, YC demo day, OpenAI? Like, why is Timothy Chalamet not sitting courtside there? Like, they should definitely have Timothy Chalamet or whoever sitting. There needs
or
to be
concerts,
courtside seats.
Right? Like, you know, like pretty much any event, it is kind of interesting to know who's up front, who's there, who came. I'm kind of interested in that. You know, what I want is not the interview, though. I just want to know literally, like, this is my version of LinkedIn. Like whenever I'm watching a Warriors game, I'll basically pause the screen and I'll try to see like, do I recognize anybody or who are these people that are sitting there? Because it's kind of like My First Million. Like all those people have some interesting success story, right? You don't get to be courtside without an interesting success story. And I want to know who those people are. Like I'd gladly pay $20 a month if somebody was just photographing who's courtside at the games and then just telling me who those people are and what they do. Like it's my version of like paparazzi or TMZ that I actually give a shit about. It's like this weird mix of like business and basketball. Very niche, but I would do it.
Yeah. The other day it was like a highlight of my week. I was watching the Thunder Pacers game and I saw a guy that we know on Twitter sitting courtside, fist pumping Mike Beckham from Simple Modern. I was like, damn, that's
yeah,
cool.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. That's cool. All right. What's your next half-baked idea?
All right. So the next one I call Lunch Bounty. Before we got to buy lunchbounty.com. So the idea is basically this. You've seen things like, you've seen these social networks where basically you can buy, all your tokens are available and to claim them, you get $100,000, right? That was BitClout, right?
Yeah.
And then we've heard these stories of people where they spend, you know, $30,000, $100,000 to go get lunch with someone. Like I believe
Warren Buffett, or
I've heard stories where people used to pay $35,000 to get dinner with Peter Thiel and it changed their entire life. But there's no real marketplace to find those opportunities. Like maybe you'll occasionally find them on eBay or their Twitter. I want to create a marketplace that's basically like, okay, if there's $100,000 sitting here and Bill Ackman, all you have to do is hit yes, and then your lunch is, you know, Ben is willing to pay $100,000 to get lunch with you. Just to have a marketplace where it's just lunch, a 1 hour lunch, and someone can basically preemptively bid on how much they're willing to pay for lunch with X.
I like this. This is actually, when you first said it, I didn't know where you were going with this, but this is actually kind of an interesting simple idea. By the way, I think the right lens for this is these are non-serious business ideas. Like, we have a bunch of serious, more boring business ideas, but these are just like fun ideas.
And the key to this one, by the way, is charity. The key is like everything is a charity.
Yeah, exactly. So you need basically, and are you saying do it permissionlessly? So like, are you saying you'll just put up Bill Ackman lunch, New York, you get it to $50,000 of somebody who wants to go have lunch with Bill Ackman. And then you basically are telling Bill Ackman, hey, by the way, we're auctioning this off. It's at 50,000. The proceeds will go to your favorite charity. Are you willing to honor it? Are you willing to do it? The guy doesn't get charged anything if you don't do it. And you're basically going to like publicly pressure them to do this to get it off the ground.
Yeah, exactly. That's the exact idea.
You know, it's sort of a gray area, but how mad are they really going to be? You're raising a bunch of money for their, you know, charity of choice. I think you could do this. I think you get away with this. I know Andrew Wilkinson did this not long ago. I think he did like a $20,000 lunch or something like that. We know that Monish Pabrai paid $650,000 to go to lunch with Warren Buffett. If you just think about like, if you had, let's just pretend you had two of these a week. Right. Maybe you have it as like a successful person and then maybe either an actor, celebrity, musician, or like an athlete, something like that. But even two a week. And let's say the average one of these would go for what? Like, you think 25K?
10 to 50. Yeah, $25,000. Good ballpark.
So you're going to raise basically $2.5 million for charity if you could even just do two of these every week.
Yeah, I actually think it's a good idea. It is a crazy idea, but I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you're trying to do like fun / social impact, this is kind of an interesting idea. And by the way, you would end up meeting all these people because you created this, like whatever this thing is, the lunch program.
Yeah, exactly. That's my idea.
Yeah. All right. What else you got? Well, do this one. Everyone needs their Birkin bag. I'm surprised you even know what a Birkin bag is. What are you thinking here?
I don't know much about Birkin bags other than it sounds cool and I think it's really expensive. So for me, what that was is one of my buddies started this company called StockX and he called me, I don't know, a year ago. And he was like, dude, I'm starting a new company. We make these awesome collectibles. And what we do is the website is, I think, ghostwrite.com. And what we do is we basically make figurines of fame. We do licensing deals and we make figurines of famous people. Very similar to this thing called Kaws, K-W-S.
So, and by figurines, are these like small figurines? Are they big? What are they, they're plastic?
I think he makes both, but for this specific one, he calls me out of the blue, 6 months. I think they're glass, plastic, a mix of everything. But 6 months ago, he calls me out of the blue. He goes, dude, I know you're a huge Phoenix Suns fan. I've got something just for you. I was like, what is it? You're calling the right guy. And he goes, you know, we're doing a special run of 6 foot tall figurines. It's like, all right, I have no idea where I'd put a 6 foot figurine. That's, I think, made out of glass.
That's like a nutcracker that you put at the door, right?
Like, it's like, I have no clue, but hey, you got the word Phoenix Suns and like, honestly, you might've sold me already. And he goes, we're doing a special run. It's only a certain number of NBA players. And we're making a Devin Booker. So a 6 foot tall Devin Booker figurine. And I was like, all right, how much? Like, you know, I guess I've been looking for my Birkin bag. So how much? And he goes $10,000, which, you know, I don't think I've spent $10,000 on myself really on anything. Outside of like, you know, investing in Bitcoin, I can't think of the last time I've spent $10,000 on something.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think about it. I said yes immediately. And then later I told my wife and I was like.
And by the way, this is like a one of one or there's like going to be thousands of these.
It's a one of one. So I'm the only guy with the Devin Booker. And, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I mean, so I'm the only guy with the Devin Booker. And I was like, okay, it's going to be cool because maybe one day he's going to call me. He's going to be like, dude, I respect that you own the other one of one. Like, that's cool.
Devin Booker's going to call you. That's the dream?
The dream is that Devin Booker's going to call him, FaceTime me one day and be pretty fired
hey,
up.
Hey, man, I heard you bought that 6 foot figurine of me.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to be friends? So, that's what you thought was going to happen?
I mean, that's a terrible dream now that I say it, but that's what I was hoping for.
Right. And, this is a small part of you.
And then I told my wife, I was like, yeah. So I got this thing coming in 6 months. I don't know when it's coming, but like, it's from a buddy. You know, here's the good news. Here's the good news. It's a 6 foot tall figurine. And the even better news is that it was a gift, but the, you know, Unfortunately, like I left out the fact that it was a $10,000 gift. It was a gift. So, you know, that's kind of led me to my new take, which is that, like, you know, everyone needs their Birkin bag. So, you know, the idea is basically like empower everyone to make that crazy purchase. It makes absolutely no sense. And just call it a gift. You know, tell your wife it's a gift.
Tell your wife it's a gift. It's a gift that I bought for myself. You know, I think you might be onto something, right? So collectibles is now a bigger and bigger space, right? One of the investments we missed on, which I think still kind of eats at us a little bit, is whatnot. We had the ability to invest in whatnot pretty early on. We tried to. The guy was like, I don't know. There's not enough room in the round. And we didn't really push it. We were like, okay, well, we hope, you know, we want to. And then we didn't really follow up. It's now, how much is whatnot worth now? I think at the time, whatnot was like valued at $50 or $60 million.
I think it's $5 billion now.
$5 billion. And I think they just said that they've done $5 billion in sales on their thing. If you don't know what whatnot is, it's basically you open an app. It's a live video of someone basically opening up like a pack of Pokemon cards or NBA trading cards. And you buy it. So you push a button, you Apple Pay, you could buy the pack. And he'll be like, oh, Sean. All right, Sean, you bought the pack. All right, man, good luck. It opens up the pack in front of you, shows you what it is, and then it mails you the cards after the fact. So you kind of like, you just shop live, and then they open the pack. You see, it's like a lottery thing. You see if you win or not, and then they mail you the thing after the fact. It's kind of like a crazy idea. But it's all collectible, and they've sold $5 billion in the last, I don't know, 12 months or something like that, of collectibles. So like, people are getting their Birkin bags. For some people, it's Pokemon cards. For some people, it's NBA trading cards. For some people, for you, it's your statue of Devin Booker. For, you know, for your wife, it might be an actual Birkin bag. I think the question is, who doesn't have their Birkin yet? So like, basically, what niche does it? And we have a buddy that is going pretty hard at tech collectibles. So he's trying to buy like the original Macintosh or like, you know, a piece of the first SpaceX Falcon. Stuff that there's not really a market for now. It just feels like random memorabilia. But I think over time, tech has become so much more important in culture, right? Like growing up, tech was a side thing, but now it's like you got movies, you know, like the Social Network, and everybody knows who these CEOs are. You know who Zuckerberg is. You know who Elon is. They're like the most followed people on the planet in some cases. I think that tech collectibles is going to be a big thing. And our friend who's doing this, I'm sort of jealous that they're doing this because I think this is a smart idea.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. But I am curious, what's your Birkin bag? Like, what have you bought?
Do you have one?
Dude, that's insane.
What is the definition here? So it's got to be something that's totally irrational, right? Like, it's not about the utility of the product. Like, I bought a piano, I play the piano. It's an instrument. Like, yeah, I could have bought a cheaper one, but I bought a more expensive one. I think that doesn't count. I think it's also got to be kind of like status or collection driven. And I don't know if I'm a collector. I'm not a car guy. I'm not a watch guy.
You did buy a CryptoPunk like, you know, 3 years ago.
I did. But I didn't buy it. I mean, we bought that just as like a marketing gag for Milk Road. We didn't really, it's not like I actually was like, oh my God, I love the art.
Yeah,
it's never been a thing for me.
Yeah,
you know what I would do? I would do if musicians did their version of Birkins. So like, if a musician was like, hey, we have like a kind of like a one-of-one collectible, maybe it's a recording or it's a freestyle or it's like a variation of the song, and they're only gonna, you know, they sell one of them and you get to collect it as a piece of art that's music, I would be pretty into that. I think that's pretty cool.
Maybe MFM needs to come up with its own Birkin bag that we can offer the biggest MFM fans.
It'll be a 6-foot statue of you, dude. Well, guys, when it comes to banking, the only time I feel truly happy is when I'm using Mercury. And that's today's sponsor for the show. That is the banking product I use for not one, not two, but actually 8 of my businesses. I have 8 Mercury accounts. I just went and counted. I use it for every one of my companies. It's an absolute no-brainer. Over 200,000 other fast-growing, ambitious companies use Mercury. It's one place you can go where not only you can, of course, have your money there, but you can send invoices, you can pay bills, you can create reimbursements for your team. Pretty much all of your financial needs can be housed under Mercury. And the product is beautiful to use. And the reason why is because it's a product that was not made by finance people. It was made by a founder, Imad. He's been on this podcast before.
And he used tons of products as a startup founder, and this is the one that he wished he had. And I actually reached out to them to become a sponsor for this show because I'm such a big fan of it. So if you need a banking product for your startup, use Mercury. You will not regret it. It's amazing. For more information, check out mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Check show notes for details.
All right, what else you got? You got any other good ones? What's your best one? What's your best idea?
Okay, I think my best idea, I've got a bunch of good ones, but I'll give you a great one. So I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about when you're post-economic, which I am not, but I hope to be at some point in the future.
The defined post-economic, what does that mean? People don't know that.
You know, basically, if you've made over $10 million and you don't have to work, what are you going to spend your time doing?
Like, I would say post-economic is when you no longer make decisions based on money. That's both spending decisions. Like, you decide what you want. The price doesn't really matter, right? And this happens first at, like, you buy guac at Chipotle. You don't care that it's $2. Then you buy, you can go to any restaurant, buy anything. You can go to any store, buy anything. And it just levels up from there. You travel first class. You don't even think about it. You travel private. You don't even think about it, right? Like, spending is one side. And then the other side is earning, meaning you decide what to do with your time, not based on how much money it's going to make you. That's, to me, that's post-economic.
Yeah. So like once you're there, you basically, you have all these nice things and you just quickly get used to them, right? It's like you move into a nicer house. After a week, for lack of a better word, you don't even care, right? It's like, yeah, I'm used to it. Get a nicer car. So I've been thinking about like, what are actual experiences that change, like, you know, that people want. And I think when you're there, one, you want to feel pain again. Like, you kind of want to go back to where you were when you were starting something, when everything was hard, and you want to feel pain. So my big idea is Survivor. So we all, you know, obviously, you know what Survivor is, basically TV, month-long TV show where you go in the middle of nowhere and you have to compete. But imagine a world where we basically created an island where you have to pay $100,000 to go compete in a real-life Survivor. So you get dropped in the middle of nowhere for a whole month. You pay $100,000 to be there, and the winner, you know, the winner wins money. But the whole idea is basically an actual Survivor that you pay to be there. All your friends and family can watch. It's live streamed. And it's purely for when those people are post-economic and, you know, they're sick and tired of flying all over the world. They're sick and tired of just staying at random hotels. Like, you know, it's just not that interesting. Like, go back to square one and go be on Survivor.
You know, I think when you first said it, I was like, this sounds kind of dumb. But actually, you know, we have so many friends that basically sell their company and immediately start training for Ironmans, right? Or triathlons. And actually, if you want to get in great shape, like, or like an ultra race, right? Where you're going to run 100 miles or 50 miles or something like that. And, you know, like marathoners and ultra racers, like they're in good shape in one dimension, but it's not actually like good for your body. Like they end up just kind of shin splints and just sort of destroying their body a little bit. They don't get in like very good aesthetic shape to do it, right? You don't like put on muscle. You kind of like skinny yourself out. But they do it because they want to do something hard. And you're right. You kind of feel alive and you feel tough and you got a story to tell and you challenge yourself. And like you do this like voluntary hardship. Cold plunge, same thing, voluntary hardship that you get to show. And so I actually think that you're probably right that there's a number of people who would sign up for like a combination of, it's a digital detox, right? Because you're not going to have your phone, internet, you're going to be totally disconnected. It's hard. And so you're going to get that like hardship experience without having to like train to run a long race. And I think it's like transformative rite of passage type of thing, which it seems like people need more and more. Now that like the whole world is so easy, you push a button and someone will like literally deliver a platter of nachos to your door from DoorDash, right? Like the life has never been easier in one sense, which creates a craving for hard. But if hard is not natural, then you have to sort of create an artificial hard. And I think that's what this is. It's an artificial hard. And I think that's why people like this David Goggins, Jocko Willink. Like, I think that's why people gravitate towards that type of stuff, because there's some itch they're trying to scratch. And it seems like you're saying, here's a version of that. Pay 50 or 100 grand and you're going to go for, what did you say, 30 days?
Yeah, 30 days. That's all it takes.
30 days and you have to survive just with your own bare necessities on an island.
Yeah, and you know, this works. You take it to other franchises too, right? It's like Love Island. It's like, don't go on Match. Use matchmaking.
So this is actually just like branded as part of the game, as part of the show, is what you're saying.
I'm just saying you take all these popular reality TV shows and people just go pay to have their own versions of them because it's better
Love is Blind. I swear, I can't believe there's not just like a Love is Blind tour going around city to city where people who are single and see Love is Blind are like, all right, I want to do it. I want to go on the pods. I want to meet somebody that way. And I'll spend, you know, basically 3 or 4 days doing this and then come out and then I date that person. Trim the like marriage part because that's the drama for TV that doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh, we propose and we have to get married in 20 days. Like you could take that part out. But just the pods experience, if I was single, I would want to do that. And that's kind of an insane thing. I can't believe that's not on tour.
I mean, for Real Life Survivor, I'd pay $100,000 right now to go there and, you know, basically like, it was just like,
hey, you don't have to pay $100,000. I could just drop you off somewhere, dude, and I'll pick you up in 30 days.
Yeah, I think like reality TV done well for people that want to pay for that is a great idea.
Yeah, it creates the desire and the curiosity of like, could I do it? How would I do it? Right? Like, and so if you just made that accessible to people, yeah, for sure. For sure, people would want to do that. And by the way, is this like, are you saying this is a business or what are you saying here?
I'm saying it's a fun, maybe it's a business, you know, maybe it could be like the new Tough Mudder. It's like, you know, back in the day when Tough Mudder was pretty big, maybe it could be the new Tough Mudder. It's just a 5-10 day experience, you know, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you got to bring the price down. I mean, 100,000 is really, it's very high. I think if you did this for $10,000, this might work, not to cheapen your idea, but I feel like you could get some scale with this thing. Cause what does it cost you to run it? It's like, you just need like a medic and then there could be like 20 people doing this together. They could live as a tribe. In fact, it's probably better as a tribe and not you on your own, right?
Yeah. It's probably way better. Like your 5 friends as a tribe in there.
Are you doing the whole thing? Are you voting people off or no? It's just 30 days of survival.
No, you're voting people off. I think you got it.
Oh, it's the whole thing. Okay. Gotcha.
I think it's the whole thing.
All right. You got some more on here. So let's do Cool Carpal Tunnel Brand. Oh, I know what this is.
Yeah. So this...
Ben, put your hands up right now if you're on YouTube. Ben right now.
He's not wearing this glove. I've never seen
Ben's right hand because every time I get on a call with Ben, he's wearing this Michael Jackson glove, this absolute OJ strangler glove on his right hand at all times. And it's because you had like a carpal tunnel issue. And so he just wears that all day.
Honestly, I don't even know if I have carpal tunnel anymore. I'm just used to wearing the glove and I like the fit. So I'm like, oh, you know, people make cool batting gloves for baseball.
It's just my thing now.
You know, now we just need cool gloves for working. Like, where's the Cool Carpal Tunnel brand?
So I guess I can explain this. You started having pain. Googled how to fix it and then this came up.
I mean, I think it's like one of those WebMD things, though, where it's like, one day I was like, my hand feels kind of weird when I'm typing. Maybe I've got bad form. And then you just go down this whole thing and you start watching YouTube videos about, maybe I have carpal tunnel. And then I went to Amazon and I probably spent $500 on 50 pairs of these gloves that I now wear every day.
We were talking about Touchland the other day with Harley from Shopify. And the thing about Touchland is they took a very boring, sterile category, hand sanitizer, literally sterile. And the founder rebranded it, remade it into something that was kind of sexy, kind of cool, smelled good. And then they started collabing, made the designs look good. They started branding, collaborating with Disney and others and licensing the IP. And I think about like actually all kind of like braces, like, you know, basically like you're talking about your wrist brace, your wrist glove. I have like a knee thing. There's like arm sleeves. There's like, you know, a lot of people wear these because they have pain and they have plantar fasciitis. They have knee pain. They have elbow pain. They have wrist pain. They have frozen shoulder, whatever it is. And actually all of those are very ugly and very sterile looking, similar to hand sanitizer. And you're probably right that somebody could just make a cooler brand in that space, charge more for it. But like, if you want to, it is fashion. It doesn't have to be ugly. It is a thing you're wearing. Why not make it look better and see what comes out of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. Again, I kind of want to hide this glove when I wear it, but you know, hey, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but although I don't know what glove would look cool on you. Like, what would I do to that glove to make it not look like you're wearing the Michael Jackson glove? I don't really know. If it was a different color, would that really change anything? It's hard to say.
I think it needs Johnny Ive. Like, you know, if we had $5 billion, we could get Johnny Ive on it.
All right, what else should we talk about?
I've got one more that I think we should hit, which is, so, you know, at the top of this episode, we were talking about how I went to K Academy. You know, basically went and spent a week at Duke basketball, competed really hard. And coach, you know, the cool thing about it is Coach K was there the whole time. He's sitting there. He doesn't talk much. But he does give like two or three speeches. And, you know, he said one thing in his speech that I wrote down that I thought was really good. Or he said two things. One of them is part of the half-baked idea. The other one's just interesting. He said, you know, at Duke, we pursue moments, which I wrote down because I think, and it's really, you know, basically he's like, everything's a moment. I want to hold these moments that are awesome. So, you know, one, I kind of took that and said, all right, I want to pursue moments. I think that's a cool
mantra. What does
that mean?
That sounds cool. But what do you really mean by, like, what's an example of that? What do you mean by pursue moments?
I think it's basically just like, be present. And like, you're looking for like enjoy very specific things and remember those things. But also I was just like, oh, that sounds cool. It's like a cool thing to tell my mom that
I do
experienced.
Like that. We pursue moments. I think that I think about like whether it's with my kids or it's like, you know, you're going to do a business for 5 years. That's a long time. And like, if I probably just told myself that, like, all right, I'm just trying to pursue this moment. What's the moment I'm trying to pursue? Or like, if I'm in the moment, really pursue it, really go for it, lean into it. I think I kind of like that. All right. I mean, I buy that. Go ahead.
And then the second part was like, you know, he was talking about how he worked with Kobe and, you know, he was basically telling this story about how he made Kobe cry before they played in like this USA gold medal game, I think in 2008 when they beat Spain. And he was talking about how he motivated him. So I went around and like, you know, at this K Academy, everyone there is like an ex-Duke player. So like there's 50 ex-Duke guys just kind of walking around that you can talk to. So I went and asked like five of them, like, you know, what was Coach K so good at? Like, what was he A++ at? And everyone just says motivation. And I know you're like a motivation guy. I know you're a Tony Robbins disciple. And, you know, everyone talked about how he just made these incredible custom videos. So I'd be like, all right, before this game, he's going to bring me in and he's going to have this custom thing that he built just for me, just to focus on, you know, my hustle or my intensity. So I kind of had this idea, which is like Coach K in a box, which is with AI, could you essentially make something that does custom motivational videos based on all these inputs that exactly you need today? So it's like, okay, if I wore this device and it knew everything about me, I just want a custom motivational video right now for this workout I'm about to do or for the sales call I'm about to take. So that's the idea, like Coach K in a box. And I know you have a bunch of thoughts. Let me hear them.
Well, when I was at Duke, my roommate, Trevor, was trying to walk onto the basketball team. And he ended up being the last guy cut. So he didn't end up getting on the team, but he was a manager for the team for a few years. So he would tell me all the time about Coach K, like, what is he doing? All that. And I had the same question like you, right? Like this guy's I think he's the all-time winningest college basketball coach. He was the men's, he's the Olympic basketball coach for a long time. So, okay, he's a GOAT. Okay, so, you know, I think you asked the right question. Like, what makes this guy so great? Because I want to learn from that. I want to learn from the GOATs. And Trevor told me, he's like, dude, he would do this stuff in the locker room. So what he would do is, I thought when a coach gives a motivational talk, it's they walk in, they say, all right, everybody, listen up. Like, we got a big game. We want to, you know, get out there. Give it your all. Are you going to give it your all? Yeah. No, let me hear you say it. Yeah. I thought that's what it is. No. Here's how it worked. He was like, before Coach K enters the room, they dim the lights. They would turn on the big screen that they had in the locker room. And it would be an edited video, like kind of like what a 16-year-old kid on TikTok would make. And it's basically a spliced video that was like, let's say it was them playing the last time they played this team, but then intersplice was like footage from Braveheart. It'd be like the speech at Braveheart, the war scene spliced in with the game. And you're like, all right, it's kind of cheesy, but they're like, no, trust me. In the moment, that shit hit hard. It's like the music, the splicing, the speech, the footage of you. And then at the end, literally Coach K came out face painted like Braveheart, rolled a ball onto the ground. And Coach K is old. Like, he was like in his 70s. He had like double hip replacement. And he would dive on the ball. And like basically the ultimate sign of hustle in basketball is diving for a loose ball. And he would run into the locker room, face painted, dive onto the ball, screaming and be like, let's fucking go kill these guys right now. And people would be like, whoa, like it was total shock value for the team. And he would really light into them and get into them on that. And so he would do the motivational up videos. And then last time we did, or 2 years ago, when we did our basketball camp that me and you do, we call it Hoop Group, where we basically take 25 or 30 of the most like ambitious founders we know. Like there's like, I don't know, half the people there are billionaires, but they love to play basketball. And we went to go visit Duke campus and we played in Duke Stadium, Cameron Indoor Stadium. And when we were there, we were asking one of the ex-players who's now a coach, we were like, can you tell us a great Coach K story? And he did. He goes, I was on the team. I was a captain and I had a bad game. And after that bad game, the next day at practice, I thought maybe Coach K would kind of like rip into me a little bit or tell me I needed to play better. That's kind of what I expected. And you know, if you do what people expect, you don't really get much of a response, right? They're ready for it. It's like somebody who's, they're tensed up. You can't really like, you know, push them over. They're ready for it. And so he's like, he doesn't say anything during the practice to me. Doesn't talk to me. And we're practicing. I'm kind of like, huh, he didn't say anything. And then he calls me over to this room and they have this film room where they normally like review game footage. And he's like, that room has like 6 TV screens or 8 TV screens in the room. And I walk in and my face is on every single one of the screens. And it's just me and him in there. And it was basically a slideshow of his facial expressions from the last game. And it was just his face kind of whining. I didn't get a call, being, I missed that shot, kind of being bummed about it. I got taken out of the game. I had bad body language there. And then in the second half started, I was having a bad game. So I was just kind of, you know, I was checked out when we were doing the team huddle. And then again, I fouled this guy and I disagreed with the call and I'm pouting. I'm doing this with my hands, being like, oh, come on, man. And they froze it on that screen. And he goes, Coach K looked at me and he goes, if I ever see the palms of your hands again, you will never play for this team again. Yeah. He's like, I don't ever. He goes, you're a captain. You're a man. You're a leader. Leaders don't look like this. They don't beg and whine and pout for something. You know, like you need to carry yourself like a leader. He goes, I don't care what you do. I don't care if the ball goes in or not, but you will not act like this again. And he goes, dude, that burned into my skull. Like he's like, I would never do that again. And I thought that was an incredible story. I was like, dude, this is a, whenever I talk to people about like, oh, what's it like to work with Elon or Steve Jobs? I'm looking for a story like this. What do they actually do that's different than something I would never do, that I would never think to do, but it makes sense when they do it that like, holy shit, yeah, that would actually like shift the way that somebody operates and somebody works. I couldn't believe that story. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, it's insane. And that's what I want. I'm like, okay, he's a good motivator. But like, tell me the stories that he, like, I want to, like, I'm like, oh, we should just go write a book where you go get 25 Coach K stories that are just about how he motivates, because it's insane.
Yeah, exactly. And also just kind of makes you think like, damn, I wouldn't even think to do that. Like, there's no rule against something like that. But like, it just feels against the norms. But I guess like, as you build up your own credibility, it's almost like lean into that power and basically use your credibility. Like he could kind of say anything. He could do anything kind of crazy and get away with it because he's Coach K, I guess. There's a method to the madness. I wonder if he was doing that stuff early on, and I wonder if he got more bold about it as he went along. But I'm with you, dude. If I had a Coach K in my life, I'd be good. I don't know if I could do the motivational speech because like I think part of it is you need like the B-roll needs to be me like playing sport. Like, the B-roll of me just like typing emails, like writing a document. Like, I don't think there's any, you could play Fort Minor on that track. It's not going to do anything for me.
It might.
I don't know.
Yeah. And also there was this one story, like, you know, a few years ago, the Heat had that miraculous run to the finals. And I specifically remember this moment where this guy, Bam Adebayo, is like up there at the end. They're like interviewing him because he's the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And he gets on the mic and he goes, dude, Udonis Haslem had this insane video for us that changed how we approached game 7 when they beat the Celtics. And I spent the past 2 years like trying to figure out what that video was. So at this camp, the last thing about K Academy is I went up to Justice Winslow, who played for the Heat. And I was like, dude, what do the Heat do to motivate? Like, what was in that video? He's like, I wasn't on the team then, but I could text some guys. He's like, but I'll tell you now, it is exactly like the thing you heard from Coach K. It is going to be something so custom. It's going to be Braveheart. It's going to be Fort Minor. It's going to be like they're pulling out all the stops. And, you know, it's like in that setting. And ever since then, I'm like, dude, I just want to, like, next hoop group, I just want to experience that for like 10 minutes. That's my only ask, you know?
Oh, that's too good. I love that story. Yeah, I really love that story. That's like, that's in my like hall of fame of like, you know, motivational stories. What else you got? Do you want to do anything else, or we're going to wrap up?
Let's see. I think we should wrap on one final thing, which is, you know, earlier you were talking about Club LTV, which was awesome. You know, I think we had 150, 200 people in it back in the day, meeting, I think, once every other week to talk business, meet each other. You know, I think we should bring that thing back in some way. What do you think?
What would we do? So we don't, I don't think we need to do the e-com version of it anymore. So here's my thesis. Thesis is a very fancy word for what I'm about to say. So let me bring that expectation down. In MFM has roughly a million people who listen to it. Maybe not all regularly, but that's like kind of our reach, is a million people who are all entrepreneurially. They're all what I call like entrepreneurs with a sense of humor, is who I think we attract. People who are entrepreneurial with and they have a sense of humor. And so my thinking is, I'm never going to meet all those people. Honestly, I don't really want to meet a million people. That's not really my goal. However, the top 1% of our audience is like a fascinating group of people, right? They're very interesting. They, you know, it's going to be like people who are like CEOs of public companies. It's some dude in, you know, Wichita who's got a $40 million like chemicals plant that he runs. There's a guy who's got this like tutoring business side hustle thing. That's whatever. There's a bunch of interesting people in that top 1%. I think what would be dope is if we did Club LTV again, which was like your thing, you would curate. It was a curated group. I think that's key, because you want everybody else in there to be somebody you're happy to have met, right? Like, that's the goal. Take the top 1% of MFM listeners and then basically do like what? Like a happy hour, kind of like a speed dating thing. That's kind of the way we did it before, which was like you meet once a month roughly, and Ben kind of puts people in groups, and then you go, you talk with a specific prompt, and then he shuffles the groups. And so you meet in an hour, you're going to meet a bunch of cool people and you're going to learn one or two things. And I think that would be awesome. We should bring that back.
Yeah, we should do that.
By the way, people don't know, Club LTV stands for, in e-com, LTV means lifetime value. It's like the key metric there. So we made it Club LTV, which is basically the name, the gimmick of the thing. But the funny thing was, Ben would always do these like, he would pursue those moments. He would make these little things that would make it fun. So like you would send everybody like custom Zoom backgrounds, or like the start of every Club LTV, because it was, we called it a club, it was like a nightclub. He would have like, you know, like DJ Khaled would record a cameo and you would play it for the whole group at the beginning. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. I think you should keep doing those things, because that, I still remember that. And I think we had set the right vibe.
I think we What's had that? Redman. I think we had Method Man and Redman too, I think.
Yeah, every time there was like some washed up rapper who would hype the shit out of us for like the first 30 seconds of the thing. And Ben's just burning like $500 cameos to make that happen.
Yeah, man. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, it's like when you meet someone that also likes MFM, even for me and you too, it's like, oh, I like this guy, or I like this woman, I like this girl. I mean, actually, you like that person.
No, I know what you mean. We're not for everybody. So if you like it, the odds of you getting along with somebody else who really likes the podcast are pretty high. So it's kind of like one of those things where if two people were wearing the hat, you would do the nod and be like, okay, I'm sure we would have a pretty fun hangout if we hung out. And that's kind of the idea here.
Yeah, and it's not Hampton. It's not a group. It's just like very lightweight, meet some other cool people, you know, get to know the other people in the MFM.
And it's free, by the way. It's not like a paid thing. So what do you want? How do you want people to like apply? Cause you're going to curate the group. So what do you want people to do how should people do it?
Let's see.
Should we put a link in the, just put
yeah,
a link
we'll
put in the
a, let's put a link in the description.
All right. If you want to do it, if you think you're in that top 1% of interesting, fun MFM listeners, put yourself down there and tell us who you are. And then Ben will kind of curate a good group every month for us.
All right. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, Ben M. Levy, I don't tweet much, but you know, I will DM you.
Why would someone follow
stuff.
You? When was your last tweet, dude? It was like in 2018.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
So that's Ben. Thanks for coming on, dude. I'm going to talk to you probably right after this because that's what we do. I call you after every podcast. So I'll see you in a second.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. I feel like I can rule the world. I know I could be what I want to. I put my all in it like no days off. On the road, let's travel, never looking back.
All right, this episode is brought to you by Mercury. They are the finance platform of choice for over 200,000 companies. Shouldn't be surprised because I use it myself for not one, not two, but I have 8 different Mercury accounts. I have 7 for different companies that I'm a part of, and then I have my own personal account because now they have personal banking, which is a really cool feature. I highly, highly recommend it. Like I said, I use it myself. And the reason why is because the way that Mercury works is beautiful. It's very intuitive. And you could tell that it's actually made by a startup founder. It's an entrepreneur. You could tell it's made by somebody who used other banking products in the past and didn't like all the different rough edges and annoyances and decided to, you know, actually fix it himself. And really, any type of entrepreneur you are, let's say you're an agency, well, one of the things every agency has to do is be able to send invoices, easily create them, send them to customers, and stay current on your balances with all your customers. Well, you can do that inside Mercury. And so I think that Mercury's great. Highly recommend you check it out. And thank you for sponsoring the show.
For more information, check out mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Check show notes for details.